talked a lot about music this morning in worship. I wondered, have we done this already today? We talked a lot about music this morning. And as I was driving home, I heard on the radio that the number one song for Christmas this year, it's kind of an older song. You probably will know it. All I Want for Christmas is Shoes by Mariah Carey. If I got that right, I think I've got the... No, that's not it. But it is, amazingly, the Billboard Top 100 Christmas song for forever. But I want to invite you to think about music with me and kind of like churn back the clock a little bit further with a particular song. Hopefully you'll know it. Maybe you can sing it along. I'm sorry about what is about to happen. It's the most wonderful time. This is liturgical Andy Williams. I love this. With kids jingle belling and everyone telling you to be a... Yeah. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Oh, that was barely good. That's awesome. Thank you so much. My wife makes fun of me when I preach and sing at the same time, so we'll tell her I made a noble effort, I guess. No, I mean, that's what it's supposed to be, isn't it? The most wonderful time of the year, that time that we get really excited about what is happening, that there's all these decorations, there's a lot of really good things that happen in this season, but also, as we're talking about on Thursday, it's also a really difficult time. For some folks, it's so hard, it's hard to even kind of celebrate, right? Right. Our theme for this season here at Sterling has been, how does a weary world rejoice? You heard that in All Holy Night just a moment ago. You know, a weary world rejoices. And we certainly have had our share of weariness. Turn the news on. So there is this great cacophony of joy and celebration and all this buildup to this moment that we have. But there is the truth that all of that emotion and all of that movement towards joy is never perfect or sustained. Has anyone had a perfect Christmas yet? I mean, we probably have thought like, oh man, that was really good. That was really nice. Until the uncle says something, or, you know, the dog gets sick on the floor, or, you know, there's some version of, oh, holy night. And still, here we are. I think that part of our understanding has to be that these things go together. The difficulty can also exist in the same space as the joy that we are anticipating even tonight. They can exist in the same space. In fact, if it were not for some of the mess that we find ourselves in, we wouldn't recognize joy when it showed up. On Monday, we got a call at our home at around 7:30 in the morning, and my wife picked up the phone. It was her phone, and it was our family doctor who said to us, I'm sorry to say, you know, anytime your doctor calls you at 7:30 in the morning, it's not going to be a good wake up, you know. And so our doctor said, I'm sorry to let you know that your family member, a family member in our house, has COVID. And we celebrated that moment with glee and joy. I'm being facetious, of course. No, and it was like, oh gosh, here we go. And so we were worried about our family member. And then we were concerned about, well, what do we do with all these things, right? So like many families right now, we had to kind of shut down an anticipated family gathering and renegotiate everything, right? Don't feel bad for me. Our family's doing okay. But it wasn't a great moment. And it was a moment where, joy was incomplete. Struggle was there. Weariness showed right back up in the midst of things, and in the midst of this disease that we have been fighting with for years. Tonight, in Bethlehem, you may know that town name, not Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, but in Bethlehem, the city of David, where Jesus was born, there are no Christmas celebrations tonight. Annually, there is a gathering. By the way, it is within Palestinian territory, but it is filled with Christians, Palestinian Christians, folks who have held to the faith that we claim here in this space. Every year, there is a parade and public celebration of the arrival of the Christ child. And this year, it's not possible. It was pulled back in part to be in solidarity with all the other refugees in the world who were dealing with a mess. One church there, Evangelical Lutheran Church, put out their manger scene, their creche with Jesus and Mary and Joseph, except they surrounded them with rubble. There's a lot of brokenness right now. You probably could name some of your own rubble as well. Now, when I was newly married, and for me, it seems like we've been married 2 or 3 weeks, you know? It just seems like yesterday. For my wife, she will say something different. But for me, we were newly married, and we are both from the southwestern corner of Virginia. It's the part of Virginia, when they show it on the weather map, they cut off, okay? So there is something beyond Roanoke, if you're not really sure about this. And I'm from that part of the state. We did not know each other growing up, but we met in college, and we grew up about an hour and 20 minutes or so apart from each other. And so for a long while, we would go and visit both sets of parents, because that's what you do, right? Some of you know the rule. Okay. So we would go, and we would call it the in-law tour. You know, it was like, and we would sell t-shirts and everything. After a while, we started calling it the in-law and outlaw tour, but that's, you know, that's a whole different thing. Now, we would drive through these kind of curvy roads through coal country, right? The southwestern part of Virginia is where coal mines were, a primary economic driver for a very long time. First it was trees, and then it was coal. And so, we would drive between our two homes through, on these curvy roads, through these little tiny villages. They were called coal camps, and they were camps that small villages where the coal company essentially owned all the, well, everything, the housing, the commerce that was there, the store that was there was owned by the coal company. There was, it was largely driven by the coal companies. And so these little kind of villages would sprout up. And my father actually was born in one of these camps. And it was hard. A coal camp is not a place known for upward mobility. And so there we would go. We would drive through those coal camps. Now, in time, because the coal companies and that economic system had shifted, people bought up those homes. They're funny. They're exactly the same house again and again and again, but people would buy them and it would make them their dwelling and, you know, life would go on. There's a little coal camp called Clinchco, about halfway between my home and my my wife's home. And in that little town, we would always kind of slow down. We started slowing down in that town because, not because of the police, mind you, but because one day as we were making that trip between the two houses, one of us looked over and saw the most amazing thing. It was, I'm not making this up, it was an entire manger scene, and I mean entire, on a roof. Now, you didn't think about it. You think about, you know, all these things that you see in people's front yards and that sort of thing, except, of course, Santa was up there too. Right. I mean, come on. We are civilized people. So there is Santa and baby Jesus and Mary and Joseph. I was talking to a young person today. He was showing me this beautiful thing that he made with, you know, Mary and Joseph and Jesus. And he said, look, it's baby Jesus and mama Jesus and daddy Jesus. I'm like, you got it, buddy. That's exactly right. And there, so there on the roof is Mama Jesus, Daddy Jesus, and Baby Jesus, and Santa Claus, and I would swear full-size camels. I don't know how they would get through a good windstorm, you know. I would imagine, and it was all lit up too, and I would imagine that it probably took the poor homeowner, you know, weeks, maybe months to kind of get it all up there and braid the ladder, and then somebody sees something crooked and they got to go back and fix it, right? And so we would stop or we would slow down. I'm sure we have a picture or maybe two or three pictures of this because every year we look forward to it. Every year there was baby Jesus on the roof. And we giggled and snickered, you know. Like, why is baby Jesus on the roof for? Well, I tell you why. Because that was a hard community to live in. And whoever owned that home, and I wish that we had had the guts to go up to that house and knock on the door. I'm not going to pick up a bell, but knock on the door and say, we love what you've done with the place. I wish we had done that, but we didn't do that. What we did is we saw and knew that community well enough to know that that place needed baby Jesus. That part of the reality of our lives is the very need for that joy to come in the midst of the darkness that surrounds us all the time. Now, some of you don't know me, but at this point, I look to the congregation and I say, amen? All right, so that's the Baptist in me. You got to work with this, all right? But isn't there enough bleakness? Isn't there enough hard things in our lives that screams we need this. And we certainly recognize that in the condition of the home, in the condition of the neighborhood, in the condition of that small community of a few hundred people, and knew what the economy was doing. We need that joy. Theologian Willie Jackson Jennings says that joy is an act of resistance to death and despair. That joy is not only something that we kind of like, oh, it's great, we're celebrating Jesus. Yay, Jesus, this is so wonderful. But actually, that Christ child coming into the world actually messed things up. And he was supposed to. Look, in Zechariah, when Zechariah starts to speak, some of you know that story, he is in the very midst of celebrating God. Zechariah says, God has granted that we would be rescued by the power of our enemies, so that then we could serve God without fear, in holiness and righteousness in God's eyes, for as long as we live. That this whole business that surrounds this is not just a party, but it's a party for a purpose. Mary, when she sings about what is about to happen, she says, I love this part. He shows mercy to everyone, not just the ones that we like, not just the ones that are like us, not just the ones who believe our way, love our way, act our way. He has shown mercy to everyone from one generation to the next who honors him as God. He has shown strength in his arm. So this whole business that we celebrate tonight is a revolutionary act. I'm sorry, I know that you didn't come for a revolution, but Jesus did. Jesus did. And the angels are singing over the shepherds, and they're saying, good news of great joy to all people. You are not stuck. You are not limited. You are not boxed into the misery that it seems like we are surrounded with. You have more because Christ is the Redeemer. In Brazil, there is a statue. It's in Rio de Janeiro. You may have seen a picture of it. It is enormous. And it stands over the city. And Jesus' arms are like this. The first time I saw that, I thought, his arms must really hurt. But there they are. They're outstretched. Now, Brazil is an interesting place. Brazil, and particularly Rio, has a lot of people that are extremely wealthy. And then there are a lot of people that are the have-nots. They really don't have nots. And there is a body of homes that is right next to, it leads right up to the mountain, to the hill where Christ the Redeemer is. There are these homes, they're called favelas, and they are, that's essentially translated as slum. It's a place that is enormously riddled with great poverty, with enormous criminal problems, with child trafficking, with prostitution, incredible drug use. There's a hard, bitter, brutal place to live, right up to where Jesus is. Now, it's interesting when you go there, and if you're able to see that, you will see the favelas behind Jesus. I mean, as Jesus would be standing there with his arms outstretched, there would be our friends in the favelas. And for a long time, people said, it's like Jesus has turned his back It says Jesus did not care. But someone wisely looked at that and said, who do you think is standing in front of the world? Jesus came into the world for the very people that follow, the very people behind him. Jesus comes so that we are not stuck. And the weariness of this world that you feel and I feel around our shoulders is not the only thing. Amen. Amen.